This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, my name is Jeff Sandhu and this is Raise Your Game. Now, there are various factors that encourage higher levels of performance from employees in your organization. Why should leaders be a secure base for employees? Why are your employees less enthusiastic about your organization's goals? And why are your employees struggling as they move up? Today on the show with me is Praveen Nair. He's the Digital Engagement Partner at Leadonomics and will be sharing with us five key success factors that obtained through the lenses of football coaching and how it can be integrated into organizations to achieve its desired excellence. So, Praveen, welcome to the show. It's a little bit about football talk, so for those football fans, we'll enjoy this, but there's a lot of elements from leadership from the football sector that we can learn about as well today, right? It's about playing to win and organization excellence. So, how would you describe organizational excellence here?
Well, first of all, good morning, Jeff. I'm really happy to be here and really looking forward to an engaging conversation with you. Now, how would we describe organizational excellence really boils down to the fundamentals of it, All right? There are various definitions for it, but I would say that it is the ability of your organization to engage and motivate the various stakeholders within your organization to deliver the highest quality of standards in your products or services. Now, there are plenty of frameworks out there that describes what organizational excellence is. One of it is the Baldrige Excellence Framework, one which I find to be very relevant. And it talks about seven pillars. Mm-hmm. First of all is the leadership, followed on is strategic planning, customer and market focus, information analysis, human resources focus, process management, and finally, business results. Mm. Now, does that sound... It's a lot of things going on, right? And now let's try and break down certain parts of it. And today, I just want to talk more about the leadership aspect of it. I think that's very crucial, as well as the human resources focus as well. Mm-hmm. Now, bringing to the point of why football coaching, You know, how on earth does this have any relation whatsoever? I think personally, being really involved in coaching and really doing a lot of research on football management as a whole, the setting is almost very similar. Mm. All right. Think of it of this, all right? A football club consists of various groups of individuals with a common goal. Am I right?
Yeah.
I mean, what are the individuals that you'll find in a football club?
Well, they're all from different parts of the world and they grew up, you know, in different neighborhoods and they sometimes speak a different language as well.
Exactly.
But the common goal is to win the league or win titles.
Right? Win the games that matter the most. Mm-hmm. Now, Bill Shankly, the former Liverpool manager, said that, you know, the Holy Trinity in football consisted of the fans, The players, and finally, the manager, the coaching staff. He had a bit of a hatred towards all those directors, apparently. But on a bigger picture, everyone in the football club plays a role, Up to the point of the kit man, you know, the groundsman who makes sure the pitch is ready for the game. Everybody has a crucial role to play. So specifically now on coaching, we are talking about how coaching deals on how it brings the best out of the individuals in the team to create a strong, dynamic bunch of individuals, right? And following on from that is how can we then develop a structured talent succession to sustain the performance of teams at highest level? Think of it as, you know, of Bayern Munich, of Barcelona. You've heard of the famous La Masia Academy, right? Mm. How do they keep churning out great players seasons after seasons that jump straight into the first team? These are all lessons for us to learn. And being a youth football coach has helped me build this perspective on team excellence. And that is why I'm here today, to just share with all of you how you can optimize your organizational excellence through five key factors.
All right. So what are the common barriers in achieving an organizational excellence?
Now, there's so many barriers out there, each very unique to a specific organization. But we could categorize it in the various stakeholders that are present. You have the employee. You have the leadership itself, and finally, the entire ecosystem. Mm-hmm. These are the three, you wouldn't really say the stakeholders, but they are the three main parts of an organization, right? Now, the first thing which I want to talk about is the lack of trust between leaders and employees due to the abuse of power, And you also have unresolved conflicts. Okay. Now, this is a very, very important part here because a lot of times we tend to close an eye on conflicts within the organizations. You know, there's a trouble brewing between me as the employee and you as my leader. and we hide it behind, I mean, we hide it under the table because we're like, nah, it's fine, you know?
Yeah.
But what happens in the long run is that the trust between both of us starts to erode.
Mm.
And over time, we just don't find, I don't find you as a secure base. And I'm going to touch about secure base later on.
Okay.
The next common barrier is poor succession planning. All right. This very much is related to, as you go up the ladder, for instance, there's roles are getting much more technical. It's much more specialized. But what you're seeing here at times in organizations is the talent gap. Once somebody senior leaves the organization, suddenly you find yourself at a huge talent crisis. So what do you do then?
Yeah.
You know. And sometimes some organizations feel that, nah, it's not really important. But hey, if you don't have proper talent succession in place, you're going to lose out in the long run and you're going to have to invest so much more money trying to bring someone from the outside to come in and do the work for you. And lastly, another barrier which I found is the lack of accountability towards a common goal within the organization.
Oh.
It's very common, right?
Yeah.
You know, you have the big CEO saying that, all right, this year we're going to achieve, you know, a top ranking. We want to hit the top spot in terms of market share. But when you trickle it down, are the employees feeling the same way? They might be like, okay, fine, all right, top in the market share, that's great. But how do we do it, boss?
Yeah, yeah, true.
And that's it.
Mm. So what's the first takeaway?
All right. So I just mentioned just now about the lack of trust. And this is very much related to how leaders should manage your power responsibly to create a strong bond of trust between yourself and team members.
Okay.
So I'll give you a situation, Jeff, all right? Now, you're a team leader that just came in. And you just noticed that the performance of your team members are below satisfactory levels.
Mm.
What could you do at that current moment?
Well, I would first actually reward them and make them happy first, right? Just try to inspire something and instead of just trying to enforce more things to do and, you know, and telling them how they've not hit their targets instead of, like, you know, get a break.
And okay, leave aside the business results, of course. That's crucial, all right? You have to achieve the results. But sometimes you've got to take a step back and have a conversation with the person, all right? It's very easy for us as leaders. And I'll just share with you an example from my coaching later on. It's very easy for us to feel that I've got power over this particular team member. Now, you've got to listen to me. Mm. You're not doing things correctly.
Mm.
And that's where things starts to get a bit sketchy. You know, you start to belittle the person. You start to embarrass the person. You hurt the person's feelings without truly understanding why it's not working in the first place.
Mm.
And so poor management of power then results in demotivation and then further on, the isolation of your team members from yourself. So I'll just share a very quick example of when I did my internship a few years back. Of course, I wouldn't want to mention the names there, right? Now, in that internship, of course, I had the opportunity to work directly with my project manager. It was a small company. But what I saw there was the abuse of power. You know, you'll have the boss coming in and just shouting his lungs out at everyone for every small mistakes done. And although it's out of our control, that, you know, that thing, that particular mistake happened, you would feel that you're the worst person on earth. And you can't have that return conversation with him and say, boss, all right, can we have... That never happens.
It's very demotivating.
Very demotivating. Yeah. And so when I ended my internship, to be honest, Jeff, I felt like, yes, I learned a lot, but I never had that... I didn't have any sort of bond with anyone there. Such was the toxic culture within that I left feeling... I didn't have any sort of trusting, I didn't have any sort of bond with any of my team leaders there.
And with the context of workplace, how can leaders build this bond with their team members? It's not easy to be friends with your team members, right?
Correct. And so I believe that respect is part of the equation, all right? How can you earn respect through your small actions, okay? Now, in my football coaching, when I started off, it was very easy for me at the start to go to the kid and say, why can't you follow the instructions that I've just played it out for you? I'm like, you bring this ball from point A to point B. What's so difficult? You know, and I would just blast out at the kid and he'll just look at me. The student would be like, but I don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I realized there was a distant gap between myself and my students. So what I then realized is the importance for me to go down to their level, understand what is actually preventing them from completing that specific drill. Maybe it's an issue from their side. They don't really understand what needs to be done. Okay. And then with all this particular conversations I have, then you start to see that the connection was starting to be built there. You know, when you have conversations, have honest conversations, okay? Mm. And if there's any conflicts between me and my students, I make sure it's resolved on a private basis, one-to-one basis. And we come up with an agreement. You're like, okay, all right, let's put aside whatever we saw just now. Let's try to work on better improvements. Yeah. And from there, honestly, I saw a magical improvements. I felt like there was a stronger connection. Now my words mean a lot to them, okay? And I'm starting to see positive improvements in their game.
Mm.
And what this means is that I've become the secure base, okay? And what secure base means is that I've become that individual that they can rely upon. And in the back of their heads, they know, this coach is pushing me, of course. He's challenging me a lot. If I do mistakes, he's ever ready to provide me feedback, but he's never going to belittle me. He's never going to say that I'm not good enough. Okay? And I was obviously inspired by, I mean, the whole idea of secure base was from the book by George Kohlreiser. He's a former FBI hostage negotiator in his book called The Hostage at the Table. And so that brings back, I mean, so that brings then to my second point. One is, how do you create that strong bond of trust? And then, how do you raise your game as a team leader consistently?
Okay, we'll find out in just a moment after the break. I'm here with Praveen Nair. He's from Leadernomics, and we're talking about playing to win and organization excellence. That's a little bit of football references for those football fans. We'll be right back. This is Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments, BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
And we're back. This is Raise Your Game. My name is Jeff Sandhu, together with Praveen Nair. He's the Digital Engagement Partner at Leadernomics, and we're talking about playing to win organization excellence, and it's a little bit about football. And Praveen, you're a football youth coach, and you're sharing some of the insights and how, you know, there's a lot of organizational leadership lessons to be learned from, you know, doing footballing coaching in the football space. And early on, you talked about, you know, being the secure base itself with the, you know, your team members and your teammates as well, and then you know, how do you now then raise your game as a team leader, consistent leader? So why is it essential for these team leaders to consistently self-improve?
Well, I believe in reciprocal, in reciprocity, right? So if you as a team leader, you want to see improvements in your team members, you've got to look yourself in the mirror and ask yourself, am I giving myself enough room to improve? Okay, because your team members, your employees are looking up to you all the time for inspiration, and that's a fact. Okay, so you can't sit down at your desk and hope for magic to happen. Okay, you can't sit down at your desk and hope for magic to happen. You've got to stand up, you've got to pick yourself up and find ways on how to improve. Now I'm going to touch about how you know, as a coach, what are the ways that I did to really upskill myself. One of the things I realized was my understanding of child psychology in sports was really lacking. Okay, like it comes back to expectations, all right? So I have my adult expectations, but I also have to realize these kids, they don't have the same thinking of football as I do, right? So I did a lot of read-ups. I tried to understand what motivates those students in football, what would encourage higher engagement with them. And then I did a lot of reading. Okay, did lots of reading. So, you know, read a book on Sir Alex Ferguson's management book, for instance. You know,
this. And you're a Liverpool fan.
I'm a Liverpool fan.
That must be really painful.
Really painful, but a necessary one, as they say. And also watched a lot of videos. There's a lot of materials out there available. And the other step which I did was to speak to senior coaches. And this is, I think, one of the most valuable lessons, you know, when you speak to people who are senior to you, wealth of experience, they would give you really a wealth of experience. I mean, a wealth of experience and feedback. And so just to summarize, I guess, two things on how you can upscale yourself. Number one, read. You know, my CEO, Roshan, always will say, read a lot. You know, there's a lot to learn from other people out there. You know, so pick up a book, go online, read an article. And of course, there's materials readily available for you if you're looking into people management, and if you're looking into specific skills development. There's tons of resources out there. The other thing which I feel is very crucial is to have conversations, you know. Be prepared. I mean, be ready to have serious conversations with your mentors, for instance. And if you get criticized, if your ideas get turned down, take it all as a lesson, you know, because you're going to end up going back to the drawing board and building again. And that's the fun part, right, of leading is knowing the fact that you're not good enough yet and you've got to go back to the drawing board, find what is missing in you and come back with a much better package.
How is having a strong focus related to organizational excellence here?
All right. So that's actually my third point, Jeff. So we spoke about the secure base and then upskilling yourself. Now, having a strong focus is often overlooked in organizations, but it's very crucial for leaders to have them. Now, George Kohlreiser, which I just mentioned just now, in his book, he mentioned how high performers use their mind's eye to focus on the benefits and achievement, which helps them to stay on track. So I'll give you a situation, Jeff, all right? Just imagine today as you walked in into the room, right? Someone comes and tells you, for instance, another producer comes to you and says, hey, Jeff, the chances of today's interview being broadcasted, it's around 50-50, you know, because of unforeseen circumstances. Would that have changed your approach?
Not really. I've been doing this for a very long time.
Yeah, you've been doing for a long time.
So you know what is plan A is this interview. If it's not happening, we've got plan B and C all ready to prepare. We've got to make sure that happens.
That's
and
great.
Then we do a post-mortem of, all right, why didn't plan A happen?
And you know, fantastic. That's really great because what's happened is that external circumstances have not pulled you down. It's very easy for us to become complacent. We'd be like, if let's just say I give you a project, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I need you to get it done in a week's time. But you know there are so many things, there's so many external factors out there. And you feel, well, there are other things out there which perhaps would pull down the project. Why do I need to do this with all my heart and soul in it, you know? So that complacency begins to creep into you. And that affects how you actually perform. Now, having a strong mind's eye helps you to overcome the feeling of helplessness when external factors start to mess around. Okay? So there's a lot of distractions coming to your mind every single day. A lot of bad news. Okay? But how do you stay focused? You know, you got to tell yourself, never mind, push it all aside. I've got to do what I need to do in order for my organization to succeed. So yeah, let's try to avoid feeling complacent. Put your 100% in it.
It's always easier said than done. So how can we develop that strong focus? Yeah.
Okay. Now, I believe in two things, all right? The power of concentration, okay? If you feel that when you enter your workplace today, you're unable to give your 100% to your work, you've got to ask yourself serious questions on how you can improve that. Okay, it could be you're easily distracted by noises. Get a quiet space, okay? Or if you're easily distracted by so many incoming emails or by tasks just coming out of nowhere, take time to prioritize them and then figure out what to do with it later on. So that's on the side of how do you prioritize, how do you work around different external factors. Another thing which I believe here is the visualization technique. So Jeff, as a football coach, what I like to do is I like to come into the field every Saturday morning, around half an hour earlier. Because what I do is, I stand there, I visualize. Honestly, I visualize. I just look at the field around. I just think to my head, this is what I'm going to do for my training today. Okay? I'm going to do four sets of activities. And I'm just visualizing how the students are going to react to it. Are they going to be engaged in it? Now, what happens if they don't have the sort of engagement that I hope for? What if they're not performing the drills as I had planned for? What could be the countermeasure to that? So visualization is important. And in fact, for today's interview, actually, I was visualizing for the past 2 weeks how the interview is going to be like. And so it really helps me in terms of my confidence. Yeah. So when I come into this room today, I am fully prepared to deliver my best. And believe it or not, and because this is the reciprocity effect, right? When you're fully prepared, when you give your focus to it, then your employees, your people around you can feel it. It's very similar to how my coaching works, all right? Because of my focus, my 100% focus, the students know that this coach is scrutinizing everything we do, and that helps them in return focus in their specific activity. And engagement comes a lot with that.
And I hope this interview was exactly how you imagined it 2 weeks ago.
I hope
I'm not,
so.
I'm not Frida Liu, you know, so it's slightly different. So you may have to, again, adjust. But again, so why is talent succession planning is crucial in targeting organizational excellence?
So talent succession is the fourth point, which I felt is a crucial factor as well, but often overlooked. as we are very busy with operations, we are looking at achieving business results. What we tend to forget is that employees are always looking for room to improve and room to grow into. Now, as a team leader, right, Jeff, let's go back to our situation-based questions. Mm-hmm. I love doing this. Right? Now, you would like to see one of your team members lead a big project in 6 months' time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, with the current time frame you have, what will you do to ensure a smooth transition? And okay, put into the context of being a producer of the show, for instance, you know.
It's tough to come up on the spot, but I guess, you know, I would first need to know exactly what kind of roles the person is involved in. Can they actually deliver in that 6 months and not just chuck it to them and expect them to do it? Conversations, I guess. Yeah.
And because that's entirely true, because progress takes time. You can't just simply take a person out there, chuck him into this role and expect the person to deliver what is expected in a day.
Yeah.
Right? Progress takes time. Everybody has a certain level of how they learn. You know, we have exponential growth, we have steady growth, we also have slow growth. And we've got to really understand how our employees' learning curves are.
Right.
And that could either be through your own internal research or engaging with professional companies. I mean, companies that really do intensive research on your employee learning curve. Now, talent development should be taken into consideration, of course, because what you have to identify here is the individual needs for future projects. So take, for instance, the example just now of your employee coming in after 6 months.
Mm.
You would have to identify in that 6 months what the person needs to know, what are the skills that he has to obtain in order for when the 6 months starts, then the person has a good start, right? He's not starting out of scratch like that.
And going in blindly is dangerous.
Throwing in blindly, right? It's dangerous. Sometimes it could work, but most of the times it fails, right? So you've got to plan it out.
Mm.
And I bring this back to an Asian Institute of Finance report back in 2015. And it touched about how financial services institutions like banks were facing a talent succession issues, especially in highly specialized roles. So that's a very serious issue, which if we take it for granted, it's going to affect us in the long run.
Yeah. So let's bring some football elements back to the show. Now, how can we learn from football in terms of talent succession planning?
Now, I just mentioned Barcelona, the La Masia Academy, where from the age of 8 itself, young kids enroll into the academy and they are taught the way of how Barcelona plays its football. Now, of course, we're not saying that you've got to recruit people, kids from the age of 8 come into your company. And, of course, we've got to look at the context of it, right?
Yeah.
But what we can learn from the academy is how they really structure the way techniques are being built.
Mm.
So take, for instance, right now in football academies, under the age, between 5 to 8, for instance, the focus is a lot more about your understanding of the game as a whole. A kid just wants to kick the ball, wants to have fun.
Yeah.
You know, you could say, oh no, you're losing 3-0, you gotta, come back and score 3 more goals. The kid won't get it. The kid just wants to play football.
Yeah.
Of course, you gotta learn a bit of ball control, learn a bit of how to shoot, learn how to move with the ball. It's all about confidence with the ball at the feet. But as they then progress to the next stage, it gets much tougher. All right. We talk about, in the teenage range, for instance, a lot of focus is being put on building the physique.
Yeah.
All right. Because as football goes, it's a very competitive sport. And your physique plays a role as well in how you can handle yourself in such competitive environment. Higher degree of football techniques. You're talking about those Rabunas, all those rainbow flicks here and there. Those are much difficult skills. But fundamentally, what's important is that the student, as they're going up the age group, right, they must have the basis in order for them to excel at the next stage. All right. And so that is why a lot of times when you see at Barcelona, why they do it very successfully is because they have a structure in place. And all right, you for this year, you're going to master this particular aspect. You're going to master ball control. When you go into the next age, you're going to focus more on positioning. So, okay, you're going to be highly specialized as a midfielder. Okay, learn up about what a midfielder should do. And so when you transition into the real game, everything happens in a snap. Of course, you're still learning, but because you've gone through that proper talent succession,
and you just fit in.
And you fit in, yeah.
Perfectly.
Of course, we're not looking at here, first game,
of course,
you
score
a hat-trick sort of a thing, right? But what you see here is that a seamless transition into the first team.
Mm, mm, mm.
And so I feel like It's good that we learn from football clubs on how they structure their talent succession. And from then on, when you build a talent succession plan within your organization, you can then identify suitable intervention activities to guide the individual in obtaining the necessary skill or competencies to succeed.
And it's also about clarity, right? So clarity, I guess it's important in leadership. It's essential for organizational today. And also, how can businesses improve in clarity?
The reason why clarity is actually the fifth factor, I believe it is very crucial. It's encompassing whatever we just spoke about in the first four factors, right? Clarity is in delivering what your instructions are to your employees. Clarity is in how you do debrief to your employees. So another situational question to you, Jeff, all right? You're having an all-employee meeting tomorrow and you're expected to deliver your business unit's plans for the year. Now, what could you do as a preparation for that event tomorrow?
Well, just make it conversational and make it fun. Yeah. Make it engaging in ways that I know they would connect instead of numbers.
Perfect.
And more.
it's so true, because what happens is that at times we would have a big chunk of information that we want to share with our employees, but we don't realize that they don't have that same level of understanding of the topic at hand. So the Human Capital Institute, in a report in October 2017, described how the lack of clarity in your workplace is actually costing you in terms of employee engagement and bottom line results. So all this time right now, you're thinking to your head, every quarter I'm having, you know, all employee meeting, I'm talking for 2 hours, I'm telling them what we need to do for the entire year. And what I get for the next term is results that don't meet expectations.
Yeah.
And it could boil down to one very simple factor, the clarity in your leadership.
So it's, again, speaking the same language that your employees speak if you're
exactly.
a leader in that sense, right?
All right. Exactly. And I know it's difficult at times because you feel like, hey, you know, my employees have to come up to my level and understand. But, you know, you've gone a long way already as a leader. You've seen things, you know. Your employees, like I said to you, they're looking up to you for inspiration.
Yeah.
You've got to break it down into chunks. And that is why, as a youth coach, what I did is I did an experiment, Jeff, with my students a month back to just test out, does clarity affect the performance, the desired performance? And it's very interesting. So in the first trial, what I did was, this was the same activity, by the way. So the activity was the students, there will be two groups. The first group of students will be in the box, with the ball at their feet, and another half of the students will be outside the box. And the activity is, in 5 seconds after I blow the whistle, the students have to retain the ball from the other group, because the other group will be rushing in to pinch the ball away and kick it out of the box to earn a point. Okay, so what I did was, in the first trial, I literally did a data dump, as you can see. I spoke to the kids for 2 minutes and I said, okay, so what's going to happen here is you'll have the ball when the coach, when I blow my whistle, you only have 5 seconds to hold the ball. The team that loses the ball loses a point. If you hold on to the ball within the 5 seconds, you earn a point. Okay? And I blew my whistle after that. Okay? They had no idea what to do.
Yeah.
So these kids just rushed in. To them, it was like, you know, whack the ball, Rita, you know. And some of them actually went to the extent of kicking their own friend's legs, you know. It got a bit rough, you know. And obviously, it didn't meet the expectations of that whole activity. So then I did a second trial. And what I did this time was, after I did another data dump to them, I spoke to each of them, each of the students. I asked them, okay, what do you really have to do here? Okay? And that's when he looks at me and he's like, I have no idea, coach. I have no idea. So what it meant was that, I mean, what it means is that for the past 2 minutes, I've been telling him so many different instructions, right? He was unable to grasp it because I was not speaking to his language, all right? So I had to go down and I say, okay, you have the ball at your feet, right? You have the ball at your feet. Now, treat this ball like an egg that you can't drop at all, okay? Keep it with you. Make sure that the other group doesn't come to you and pinch the ball out from you. And all four of them understood the instruction very well. And when I blew the whistle, 5 seconds, they retained the ball. They retained the ball. Of course, I remember one guy managed to pinch the ball out after 6 seconds and he was celebrating wildly. I'm like, calm down, son, 5 seconds, okay, 5 seconds. But there itself, I saw the effect of clarity. You know, we could speak all we want for 20 minutes to someone in front of you. But if I ask you a question, Jeff, can you just repeat what I've just said? and you can't reciprocate that same meaning, that means as a person, I failed in how I deliver my message to you. Mm. The clarity was missing. Mm.
It's like that infamous Mourinho and Pogba speech at the side of the touchline.
Yeah, side of the touchline. A lot of hoo-ha about that, right? But it's actually very true, Jeff. Think about this, all right? When you look at managers with so much, with so little time that they have, how do they prep their players for a game? All right, they've got to be very clear. They've got to be very clear in their message to the players, because players will have so many, you know, the fans' noises will be, you know, it's so noisy. You have the pressure of playing against an opponent who is equally as good as you. The manager has to keep it as concise as possible, but be very clear to the players. This is how I want y'all to play. Okay, la da, and so on.
And let's summarize the five key lessons for today's show here.
Okay, sure, Jeff. The first lesson, I believe, is that you've got to build a strong bond of trust with your team members. And that will be helpful if you could be a secure base that they need. All right? So be the secure base for your team members. Listen to them. Challenge them, of course. But don't abuse your power. The second lesson is, as a team leader, always find room for improvement. Consistently upskill yourself, because like I said, if you want your employees to follow your lead, they will always reciprocate you as a leader. All right, so always upskill yourself. Number three, focus on what you want to achieve. Okay, like I mentioned, George Goldreiser mentioned about how high performers have a strong mind's eye focus. Focus in what you're doing, okay, so that you and your team will be in control of what the destiny of the project would be. During potentially helpless situations when external factors starts to come in and disrupt the whole operations. Number four, develop talent succession plans. Okay, we've spoken about how La Masia Academy. We could also touch about Southampton, and very famous English football club. They're not doing that well, but you know
the academy
is doing really well in churning out great players. And so, from a perspective, when we try to put into the context of organizations today, how can you ensure that the talent succession plan is there to ensure that highly specialized roles can be adequately replaced by even more capable ones within your own organizations. And finally, clarity in leadership will always encourage higher commitment to goals. I've seen it before. I've done the trials. I've seen the results. And if you are feeling that the top four factors are in your favor, but you feel that you're not achieving the results, you may want to look back at how you're delivering your instructions on how you're delivering, your key message to your employees, so they know what they have to do in order to achieve the organization's goals.
And I'm sure Jurgen Klopp is also doing all these five for this upcoming second leg game.
Yeah, big game, so, big game.
So what do you think are the changes that we can see in the workplace through these five lessons now?
Well, there's, of course, various changes we could see. I will just touch on three main changes I think would be very apparent. First of all, with the secure base relationship, you will start to see higher commitment between the leaders and team members to achieve a collective goal. And that's because there's a strong bond of trust. So there's higher, put into words, you know, like if you were to fail, for instance, you know, Jeff, as a team member, I will come down to you and I'll tell you, Jeff, all right, it's okay. You tell me what happened, what went wrong. Now let's find areas of how we can improve. Okay? Yeah. Strong bond of trust right there.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And number two is there's higher confidence in one's ability to progress. Now, if I walk into an organization today and there's a clear talent succession plan there, raises my confidence. I know that if I'm going to step in into a much higher, more specialized role, the organization is more than ready to give me the knowledge and skill that I need to in order to succeed at that role. And then the most important point is, with clarity comes a stronger belief and clear direction for the individuals involved to ensure that we can do what it takes for the organization to excel.
And hopefully also a spot in the Champions League semi-final then.
Yeah, big game. Big game.
I've been speaking to Praveen Nair. He's from the Digital Engagement Partner at Leadonomics, and we're talking about playing to win and organizational excellence. If you miss any parts of the show, the podcast will be up soon on our BFM app. It's available on the Apple App Store or Google Play. Praveen, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much,
Jeff, for your time. It was a real pleasure.
And this has been Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.